So welcome to the Salesforce Posse, recorded on the 18th of March, 2022. And here I am very pleased to eventually have on the podcast, Andy Engin. Did I get it right?
That's perfect.
Oh, brilliant. Perfect. So thanks so much for being on the podcast. I've been meaning to chat for ages, but kind of circumstances never quite transpired. My kids got ill and then we had to postpone, and it just kind of went round and round in circles a little bit, and eventually we managed to get on. But I've been meaning to get you on for quite a while. But just to start off, I'd love to know, like, because you've been in the Salesforce ecosystem relatively recently ish not like 10 years or a decade or anything like that. And I just wondered, you know, how did you get into the Salesforce ecosystem?
Yeah, well, first of all, Francis, thank you very much for having me. I'm super excited being here and telling my story to your audience. Mm. Now, I'm a very, very different guy. Like, my background and history is quite different. Now, I was born in Turkey, raised in Turkey. I went to a German junior high and high school. I learned everything in German language for 8 years. My gym teacher was German.
So, did you know German before you went to the school, or were you?
No.
Oh, really?
No. So, I mean, for the last 6 years, we've had also English, and we had all kinds of other classes that we could take. I always wanted to go to the United States, get better in English and, also advance my studies. I decided to stay for my undergrad studies in Turkey, in Istanbul. I finished industrial engineering. And in 1994, I went to University of Florida from Istanbul, Turkey. And University of Florida is in Gainesville. And I finished engineering management there. I met my wife also in Gainesville. And, my wife was also studying, doing the same program with me. And then I ended up working for American Express in Fort Lauderdale for about 4 years. And I always wanted to move back to Turkey, and I proposed to my now wife, Amy, and I said, I want to move to Turkey with you. And we stayed in Turkey for 18 years. We have wonderful 2 kids. Our daughter is now at University of Florida, we went full circle. And our son just qualified to go there, but, he qualified for a couple of schools, so he hasn't made his decision yet.
Right.
So we never planned on moving to the United States. We were going to stay in Istanbul, Turkey, but, especially the education system and the way things were going with the universities and the state of universities got us a little bit concerned. And we always wanted to have the kids have the same education we've had in the United States. So as they approached college age, we said, let's make this change. And my background as it relates to Salesforce and anything technical is, I'm the type of a kid who always played with computers, right, from the very young
good
age.
Idea, yeah.
my first computer was a Spectrum, in fact,
Oh, right.
you'll know Spectrum, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I grew up like typing in basic games from books into Spectrum.
Realize you got a mistake somewhere, having to
exactly. After hours, you find out it doesn't work, And then all those games on tape and things like that. I'm not gonna go back to that. I sound super old when I do that. But
I remember going down to the hitting play on the tape recorder to load the game, going down to the sweet shop, coming back and realizing it crashed halfway through playing.
Yeah, but when I started my professional career, I started doing like process analysis and quality stuff, some simulations, and I quickly got promoted to a project manager position. And then after that, I got involved with service and call centers, and I was a call center guy for almost all my life after that.
Oh, interesting.
And the last position I had in Istanbul, Turkey, I was running the Turkish arm of Teleperformance, an international giant for BPO and call center operations. And I had close to 3,000 staff, about, I think at that time, $36 to $38 million revenue every year. And you know, when we decided to move to the United States, it didn't really work out with the employer at the time, because they exist actually in the United States that I take a position over on the side.
Right.
So I said, I want to go more technical. My introduction to Salesforce, I mean, first of all, I've been involved with CRM systems almost all my life. You know, like I worked on Siebel. I had staff working on Siebel. I used to write Access databases like when, you know, that was a thing.
Yep.
even to just keep a record of all my personnel in the call center, you know.
So I even
thought like an elective class at the university about social CRM at some point. And I always kept track of different technologies that was coming along. And more than 10 years ago, I think it's been like maybe 12 years, I had a small sales team at this call center company that is owned by the biggest telco in Turkey. And when I was managing them, I implemented Salesforce.
Oh, right.
At that time, the telco was implementing Siebel and was having a tremendously difficult time like everybody else. and you know, they didn't have the time to spend on us to implement any kind of CRM for our purpose. Yeah. So I just plugged in my credit card from all the way in Turkey. I was probably one of the first clients of Salesforce in Turkey.
Yeah.
And, you know, I started using Salesforce. We had a couple of very little partners who helped us configure a couple of things. And we were on our way. And
it's amazing how Salesforce just got into companies just that way, by somebody just handing over their credit cards, because their internal IT or whatever, you know, didn't work. So it's like, credit card, here we go.
So when I decided to move to the United States, that happened in around 2017. In summer of 2017, my wife and kids moved. I was still working in Turkey, so I was traveling back and forth.
Right, okay.
I started studying for my admin certification kind of like maybe October, November of 2017. I moved to the United States in March. I got admin certified in April. And then I established a limited liability company. Then I made that limited liability company a Salesforce partner.
Right.
So then I started getting more and more certifications.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody has a superpower, right? Everybody has a superpower.
Absolutely.
You know, we are good in some things and we are not good in some other things. And it used to be in the past that, you know, you focused on your weaknesses and tried to get them stronger. Yeah, that's not the way people realize.
Exactly,
now, you know, I think my superpower is I can learn things by myself. You know, like, so I'm a self-taught, 12 times certified. Now, I actually got Slack admin certified yesterday.
Oh, really?
So 13 times. Yeah. I wanted to change things up. So, you know. So 13 times certified like application architect.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
All self-taught. Awesome. And I was doing this business by myself. And then, you know, well, how did we get to Flows, right? You know, that was another question.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, I always had programming in my background. I've done some, I think, MATLAB when I was doing my master's at University of Florida. I was doing some kind of nonlinear optimization on MATLAB, imagine. And, you know, I always had some kind of coding background, but, you know, I didn't really spend a lot of time, like, typing code.
So when you were using the Salesforce platform, was it still more declarative? You didn't kind of get into the code side of Salesforce?
Well, yeah. I mean, I got Platform Developer 1 certified, right?
Right.
And, you know, I did write some code and, you know, I read some code, but, you know, I cannot really imagine myself spending all my day in front of a computer typing stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, I have attention issues anyway, right? So, so I'm the type of guy who cannot stay focused very long time. I cannot, for example, read very long, boring books. You know, I've never been able to. You know,
oh,
so
really?
I'm not that guy. So, when I found Flow and I started playing with it, I'm like, this is really cool. This is what I want to do. And, you know, I started playing with it and, you know, it just felt natural. It was fit. It was a great fit for me. And I started focusing on it more and more. And I love helping and teaching people. I said, let me just see whether people are going to like my style, whether they can understand my Turkish, German, whatever accent. whether the pace
so
is good.
So what was your motivation for? Because you've created an hour of course on Flow, Salesforce Flow. Yeah. What was your motivation to create it?
Well, I mean, I believe in lucky coincidences and I always believe in listening to people. I mean, I have actually another side. I'm also an angel investor.
Right.
I invested already like into four startups. You know, one of them had to stop. I have three. But I understand the startup mentality quite a bit. So, and I like that. So what I do is I see what I like and, you know, I create like a minimum viable product or whatever, you know, like for that project that I have. And I put it out there and then I listen to feedback and I evolve, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Into things I like, obviously. If I don't like something, you know, I'll stop doing it. When I moved to the United States, I put a couple of things on Amazon, sold a couple of things. I'm like, you know, this is not for me. I don't like anything about this business, right? So when I started doing, I said, okay, well, I'm going to create a class, like free training on, and I was using at that time a platform called like a new startup called Superpeer, where you could do live webcasts and also record what you're doing. So I decided to teach Salesforce Flows in Turkish and in English. I started both programs at the same time. And that was, I think, was it January 2021? The recording is still on my YouTube channel. It's actually quite popular. I mean, I have actually two YouTube channels. People don't realize I have Turkish content, yes. And I have also English content.
How does your... What's the... Because I love, like, my students, and like with yours as well, I'm sure, you know, on your Flow course, you get students from all over the world because you're nearly like 2,000 students, is it? I can't remember now.
It's now 2,600.
Yeah, so nearly 3,000 students. And so how is it different teaching? Are you literally carbon copy teaching? Do you get different questions? Like, how is it different teaching it in Turkish than it is in English? Or the reactions to the students and the questions you get.
I mean, well, there are fundamental cultural differences, first of all. I mean, toward education, toward the content, you know, the level of criticism and appreciation, they are quite different from one culture to another. So that's the fundamental difference, first of all.
Right.
The Turkish eye, probably including me, is quite like perfectionist and quite critical.
Right.
The first time I tweeted, I have also like a Turkish Twitter, you know, like I have another handle where I tweet Turkish once in a while. When I first tweeted my Udemy class, the Flow Udemy class in English to that audience, and there are a bunch of talented people who speak English, they... watch the free introduction, and in the free introduction there was like subtitles, and you know, because they want to understand very well, when you're a Turkish speaker you usually like to turn on subtitles so that you don't miss anything, and the subtitles were automatically generated and there was some odd word in it, and that was the first thing they responded to me with. They said like, well, great class, but you know, what the hell is this word? You know, you won't get that from Americans. You know, that's wonderful. That's wonderful that you don't get that, right?
Yeah.
So it's just different. I mean, I'm not saying it's really bad, but the take is quite different.
Yeah.
And obviously, the economic pressures and, you know, what's happening in that country is dominating everything. Like, people from Turkey, they really want to understand whether this is a viable career for them that they can adopt and, you know, that'll help them to get to a better income level, possibly even move out of the country for like a different future, right? So that's what they are thinking, rather than possibly the skills first. They want to understand, what is the vision? You know, where can I get to, right?
Yeah.
And that's very natural. But I mean, it's been, how did I get to Udemy? That's also quite important. So I I thought these sessions, and you know, I surveyed people, I got some feedback, and the feedback was phenomenal. You know, I mean, my first session, I think 80 plus people registered and 50 plus showed up. I couldn't believe it because, you know, I did it out of the blue. And then I put the videos out there. People are watching it. And I had this guy. I think he was from the UK, by the way.
Oh, right.
This guy writing to me on LinkedIn. And I have his name somewhere, but I don't have it memorized. He told me, dude, you know, I watched a lot of content about Flow and whatever. And, you know, I actually have a lot of Udemy classes as well. And nobody does this thing like you do. Because what you do is you get on there and then you start doing it step by step. And as you do it, you tell us why you're doing it.
Yeah,
I mean, this is super valuable. And you just got to get this on Udemy.
I think I find that. Yeah, I find that with... It's like the difference between why don't you just learn it on Trailhead? Why don't you just learn it? You know, and I think a lot of people, it's like, well, yeah, functionally knowing how it works, great, but actually why do we use it and what are the best practices for using this feature or this function or, you know, all those little gotchas that I think you get value out of, you know, a proper course, you know, so.
Yeah, and, you know, I ask people, I'm like, do you understand me? Is the pace good? And, you know, they said it's good. So I said, okay, let me get this out there. And for a perfectionist like myself, it's actually super hard to produce something like this.
Yeah.
I produced it. It took me quite a bit of time. And when I put it out there, I didn't even watch it. I'm like, you know, I can't watch this, you know. And I watched a bit of this.
I hate listening to myself. It's like,
I watched weird, a bit of this and I said the wrong word in it. I said, like, I have to correct this one now. So I have to get away from this. So for me, putting something out there on Udemy is much, much different because because it's free, I can leave some stuff on YouTube that's a little bit out of date because I know people can find still value in that. But when I put something on Udemy, it's still, if it's still for sale and everybody has lifetime access, I feel obligated to update it.
Keep it set fresh, and
it is insane.
It's a constant... job,
yeah, it is an insane person's job to keep anything updated on Salesforce, especially related to Flow, because the Flow product team is like on a
really
steam
evolving,
really evolving. I had to immediately change screens because they constantly keep changing screens. You know, they look different now.
I remember when I did my admin course and they had the lightning had the kind of like the sidebar to access all the objects and stuff, and then they flicked it to the top and it was like, like everything has changed, you know.
I mean, the feedback is phenomenal. It's very, it's awesome to watch that dashboard on Udemy too, the world map.
I see
people signing up from Mauritius and New Zealand. I don't know, it's just fascinating.
It is really fascinating. And what I love doing is like reaching out, I do kind of success calls with students to find out more about them. And like, I just like a week or two ago, just did one with a student in South Africa and another one in, I think it's like Mozambique or somewhere like that. And it's quite fascinating just finding out how Salesforce is evolving in their country and their challenges and things with using or not using Salesforce. And it was quite interesting just kind of, like one of my students, they feel like they're at the utter cutting edge of Salesforce because they know everybody in the country that uses Salesforce. Literally, there's like 10 of them, you know, and they've got this kind of little community going on, which I kind of felt like 12 years ago when I started in Salesforce in the UK. It was all very brand new. Nobody knew what Salesforce was. Whereas now, you know, I was at my kid's a birthday party, one of my kids' friends, and one of the mums came up and said, hey, you're that Salesforce guy. And I was like, oh my God, this the world is, you know, I never used to get that at all. You know, if you go to Dreamforce, but nowhere else. And it's just a little bit weird now.
Before that, at parties, you said you were involved with Salesforce and they were like, what?
Yeah, like, exactly, yeah. What's that? It's a cloud computing. What's that? It's like, oh God.
Yeah, my story is vastly different. I'm the guy who just happened to be there and got interested in this and loved it, liked it. And I was on the surfboard when the tide went up. You know, like, seriously. Yeah. That's how I define the whole thing, because you know you were actually there early on, and you were doing all the work, and you've been through so many different interfaces and iterations. But no, like for example, I learned the details of Process Builder and workflow rules. I just knew very little, because now I know there's a need for people to actually transfer their stuff, like migrate their stuff from workflow rules in Process Builders to Flow. When I got involved with Flow was pretty much like this, you know, like not as capable, but still the same platform. I didn't even work on the Flow platform with the previous Flash interface or whatever, you know, that they had before.
Actually, I was in when Salesforce first purchased, because it was purchased from another company. I can't even remember who it was. And actually, I remember being in the first, one of the kind of partner training courses for this new product that was called Flow at the time. Well, it wasn't called Flow. I can't remember what it was called. Maybe it was Flow. But yeah, it was very different. It was like a separate application on your desktop that you had to build it in and then save it up to Salesforce.
I know exactly what that tool was supposed to do. I didn't know the tool, because I come from the call center environment. There was a wave of products that were created for you to script what the agents are supposed to say
came from as well. So before I got into Salesforce, I actually worked in a different CRM, which is all process driven. That very much focused on call center, where it's really scripted and the screen pops to, you know, outbound call centers where the screen is popping constantly. It's all timed and ranked and all this kind of stuff. And it's quite, it's quite interesting now that Salesforce is moving from this record driven CRM, which was my kind of excitement when they first bought the Flow product, was at last we're moving away from this record driven CRM to this more process driven kind of CRM, where you could define those processes for call centers and things like that really well. But yeah, as you said, like workflow, process builder, you know, they're going the way of the dodo. You know, everybody's going to need to upskill into Flow. Was it the end of this year? Is it that workflows, you no longer be able to create new workflows, I think?
I'm not sure.
I think it is.
They said possibly maybe 23.
Well, I think they usually announce it, freak everybody else out and everybody out, and then push the date out a little bit. So yeah, you're probably right.
I don't know. But I mean, like with the state that the Migrate to Flow tool is in, it doesn't seem like they are very close. I mean, they need to give people a tool first.
Interested to get your feedback on this, because I was quite interested when, like, the last release before they put to be able to order the flows.
It was this release.
And I was quite interested on why they released that now, because obviously, if you're migrating workflows and process builder processes over to Flow, you need to keep the order the same if you're using the migration tool, right? Otherwise, they could reorder and your execution could change and fields that it was expecting to be filled out aren't, and it kind of your process breaks, right?
Yeah.
But they've released the feature already to order the flows. So if I set the order to be, I don't know how it quite works, but say zero as in I always want to fire this first, when you go to migrate the rest of your workflow and process builder processes, surely it's then going to screw up the order, because then you've got yours in between. I don't know how it's going to work.
So first of all, there is no guarantee let me say this again. So first of all, The order of execution is not guaranteed on any of the automation tools. So if you have multiple workflow rules, multiple process builders, and then multiple flows, like, you know, you don't really know which order they are going to run.
It's not guaranteed,
So if you convert a couple of workflow rules, a couple of process builders, or you rebuild them on the flow side, but you decide not to put them into one single flow, then you don't really know what order they are going to run in. And you don't really need to, you don't really have to use the execution order sequence number, whatever, you know,
the functionality that you get. They're connected within the flow, I suppose.
No, I mean, even
if you're rebuilding it into a single flow, or if you're connecting the flows together.
Even if you have multiple flows, right? You have multiple triggers on the same object. Let's say you have five before save and five after save triggers. If you do not use the order of execution number, it's going to actually do whatever it's been doing. So,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like,
So it's the same as having a process builder or a workflow.
Yeah, you can keep doing what you've been doing. That's fine. But if you really wanted to influence the order, then you can give it a number from 1 through 2000. And then that will define the order of execution. Now, they advise you, like in any other area of Salesforce, if you get sequence numbers, we have that in CPQ and a couple of other places. Mm. They advise you to use numbers 10 apart so that you can put other things in between if you need to. So even in that case, divided by 10, you get about 200 before save and you get about 200 after save. And this is the interesting part. Like, the numbers from 1 through 1,000 execute first. Mm. And then, as far as I can remember, the triggers that don't have any number assigned execute. And then the numbers from 1,000 to 2,000 execute. There's also,
interesting. Yeah,
there is also something, a detail in there. Now, obviously, it's very hard to test all this thing and, you know, like, see what it does.
And this is where I think, so when you migrate the workflows and the process builders, does it assign it a number? I'm assuming it does.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it does.
So how do they know? Because this is the problem I've got. It's like, so say if we've got these workflows and process builder process, they haven't been assigned a number, but generally they execute in the same order, as they always have been. Yeah, although it's not guaranteed, but generally does. You migrate them to flow, it's now shifted, and that's not now guaranteed if they're not going to put the sort order reference in it. So now potentially your workflows and your process builders are all jumbled up now as a flow if they haven't set a sort order on.
Well, let's take an example, right? Especially on the workflow builder side, I don't think there is any potential issues because the things that you can do are quite limited. We're talking about field updates. We're talking about create a task, email, and outbound messages. Like, there are four things you can do on the workflow rules side. And these are actually executing right now after save. There is no before save on workflow rules.
Yeah, but then if your criteria is relying on the previous workflow criteria to be... and then you're reevaluating the workflows again...
That's actually more of a problem than a feature. That's why they don't want you in the workflow rules. Now, the workflow rules are prone to recursive action. There is actually, they can run again, right? So, but when you go to the flow side, you can decide whether you want to run that before save, after save, now, even play with the sequence. But I mean, in general, when you're doing things on the workflow rule side, you shouldn't be really having multiple workflow rules relying on the output of the previous one or something like that. That's not really
work, right? But in the but I've seen it many times.
Oh, really? Okay. So actually, by the way, let me just announce it here. I think the video turned out great. I have a video on my YouTube channel called "I Broke the Flow Trigger Explorer." Something like that.
I think I've seen it. Yeah, I haven't watched it. I saw it on your YouTube channel.
And you know what I did over there, which is quite interesting? I think I used 3 before save flows, and I used 3 after save flows. And I designed them in a way, it's kind of like domino stones. You know, like one does one thing, and the next one relies on the previous output, exactly like you said.
Yeah, yeah.
And I put them in sequence, they were perfect. And immediately when I changed the order, obviously they break.
Yeah.
So we know this thing works, right? You know, at least to some
extent. To that point, yeah.
Let me tell you what that is in my own perception. I think Salesforce wanted to put this thing out there because we've had many MVPs, many influencers started publishing content saying, you know, you should be only doing one flow per object.
Per object,
and,
yeah.
And, And Salesforce didn't really want that. They said they don't really impose a rule like that, but you know, they didn't really give you a way of managing it either. And I think they wanted to get ahead of the curve, and you know, they wanted to give a message saying, okay, well, you
it's
can
it's not the same as process
yeah, you can manage workflow, yeah. You can manage multiple triggers now using this interface, although at this point it's not perfect. For example, it doesn't show you the Explorer doesn't show you the flows in the execution order. The view actually shows you all the flows in alphabetical order. So, you know, like there are things that they need to do still. But in the end, it was more of a message, I think, a general message than the functionality itself. Because, you know, what I found really interesting is, you know, the thing didn't come out in beta. They just, you know, we didn't hear anything. Nobody expected this. I didn't expect this soon. I didn't hear anything about it. And then all of a sudden, it's like, we are GA with this. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, and this is why it's like it came out from nowhere. And I was a little bit, okay. Yeah, it makes sense. And this is what I kind of thought. Maybe it's something to do with that workflow and process builder migration, that they needed to do it to allow them to do use the migration tool to make sure everything kind of stayed in the right order.
I think there is one aspect that's very much related to what you're saying, which is people have multiple workflow rules, like obviously in their legacy Salesforce orgs, or like the orgs that they've been working on forever, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I've seen clients who maxed out on number of workflow rules they can build on the object. I'm like, you know, oh my God, you shouldn't be doing this, but they have it. So, and you cannot really automate the refactoring of the workflow rules and the creation of one single or like two, three good flows out of 50 workflow rules.
Yeah.
So when they give a tool to migrate workflow rules one-to-one to process, to flow, they need to also give away to people to organize all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So it is related. I agree with you.
And I think also, even if you just take like process builder and workflow, you know, workflow executes before process builder. And therefore, even just that, the fact that all process builders, you're expecting them always to fire after the workflow is completed. Potentially, even with recursion, if I get my, afterwards, yeah. So even that, when they migrate over to flow, should still have that order, even if it's just all your workflows and all your process build, I'm assuming.
I mean, I honestly think, and you know, I've said that many times, and other people have said that too, especially if you are working on an org who that has multiple automations running, the migrate to flow tool to migrate one single automation directly to flow is not going to help you.
Yeah.
So you need to go into what automations you have, and I promise you, you probably don't know, right? You know, you probably don't have the wholesome picture, the accurate picture
of everything that's
running. So you need to start documenting, and you need to put that together, and you need to see how that would work best on the flow side. Because, by the way, flow is much, much more powerful than, you know, anything on the other side. People just don't realize this. Is the first thing I tell them once I start talking about flow. I say record triggered flow is one type of flow, right? You know, like out of like, I don't know, 6-7. Now we have more, like with the orchestrator and all these other templates, we have even field service mobile flows and this and that. So let's say 10, one out of 10. And under record triggered flow, we have before save and after save. So after save record triggered flow does everything that workflow rules and process builders do and more.
Yeah.
But we have a huge space out there, you know, like that, you know, you can play with. You can do many more things. So once you're looking at what you've been doing all these years, and then, you know, you look at the whole picture, most probably you're going to want to do things differently when you come over to flow.
And you've got the toolkit of flow to make those changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's where actually training and education comes in, because I want everybody to understand all the different flow types and what the flow can do, basically. That's the first thing. I mean, I get this question quite a bit. People will contact me and they'll say, like, tell me one resource that'll teach me everything about flow. That doesn't exist. Yeah. I don't have it. Nobody has it.
Exactly.
So what I'm
and it changes every three times a year anyway. Yeah.
That's right. So what I'm trying to give you right now is a quick and easy way of, you know, understanding, getting the fundamentals right about what flow can do. You know, what are variables? How can I loop? What's a trigger? You know, what's a scheduled triggered flow versus a scheduled path? Because, you know, these are tricky. They get confusing. So once you understand everything that's out there, that'll give you the base that will help you evaluate, you know, what you can do on the flow side. And then you'll start drilling into details and learning more and more. And that will have to be always there. Because in the end, whether we all agree or not, this is low code is very similar to coding in the sense, you know, there are unlimited possibilities almost, and there are so many different ways of doing things.
Yeah, I completely. Mean, and it's really funny. It's like, oh, whenever people go, oh, I want to learn Apex or triggers, I'm like, do you know Flow? And they're like, no. I'm like, well, start there. If you're an admin, if you're, you know, definitely do Flow first, because it's almost you're learning all those little coding concepts that you don't really know you're learning, but you are using flow, recursion, collections, all kinds of stuff, variables, so that when you want to then move on to code, if you want to after that, it's way more accessible and it's an easier learning path in my opinion. But yeah, I definitely think flow is everybody should be learning, really.
And that's also the reason why I always I shy away from making very bold statements about what to do and what not to do. But that's very understandable. The people who are stepping into the flow world, they actually like the comfort of knowing, okay, do this, but don't do this, right? They want a clear picture. They want you to tell them, you know, do it this way, this is the right way, the other one is the wrong way. But that doesn't exist in most of the areas under the flow, right? And I also shy away from saying things like that because now that I'm an influencer, according to Salesforce Bannon, whatever, you know, people know my name. I don't know. I don't even know what that means. But
neither do I. I really don't. No.
There is something out there. So what I say kind of carries certain weight, right? So if I tell people, okay, never do this, and then they've been doing that for a while, they are gonna feel bad, right? They are gonna be like.
I think it's the same. I thought I've seen it on. Well, you've probably seen it as well. There's kind of been some kind of messages and things like that of people posting things and other people going, "Oh, I would never have done that." And I think it's like it's a learning journey. You know, you and different. There's always a million different ways to do the same thing, and your business and your org has different constraints to somebody else. That means that you have to do it in a different way. And so, yeah, it's just kind of over time learning what works and what is best for you in that kind of scenario, both business architecture, you know, your architecture of your org and the limitations of data or, you know, if it's huge data volumes or not. And it is. You do things in different ways. But it's coming together and learning from each other and is what I find, you know, is really fascinating. Which is why I love these, you know, our community groups that we do and stuff like that and everybody's webinars and stuff like that, because you kind of constantly learning different ways of doing things, different best practice. Oh, I did that, but actually, yeah, this could have been better if I did it this way in this other scenario. But yeah, it's all kind of valuable stuff.
Yeah, I shared this before. I mean, obviously jokingly, but, you know, about a year ago, like a little over a year ago, I taught my son how to drive, right? Teenage driving. So what I usually tell him is like, move slow, be careful, and stop when you hear a sound, right? So and check.
Absolutely,
yeah. You don't want to be moving fast because you're gonna crash big, right? So so it's the same thing with flow, right? You know, just do it in the sandbox and try everything. By the way, that's how I learn. You know, I try everything. Do not go into your org and, you know, in production, try things. Try this, like, scheduled triggered flow that can change, like,
the
10,000 records. No, don't do that. But try it in your sandbox and see what it can do. And if you mess up, just correct it. Learn from it, right? Mm. So that's the idea.
Yeah, and that's what we're all doing anyway. You know, every time there's new features come out, is, you know, having a play, seeing what works, what doesn't, moving on.
Yeah. And I like to share when I mess up too, because I want people to see the humanity of it, the humble side of it. I mean, the other day, I think it was David who shared, like, on LinkedIn, well, don't forget to activate your flow. That's the most important part. And I teach that too, but I wrote right underneath it, I said, who opened the ticket with Salesforce before because their unactivated flow never ran? And, you know, raise my hand.
Yeah,
I did absolutely. That. I did it, you know?
I think I did that with workflow back in the day as well.
Yeah. We all do these things. Yeah. I mean, that's fine. Just the nature learn of it.
And I think, you know, I always like failing is the best learning experience, I always think. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you're always successful, you don't know what you don't know almost. But by failing, you're kind of learning from that. Like the failures I've had over the past, I've learned a lot more from, I suppose, than my successes. Even if it's certifications or whatever it may be. But yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and another thing that I do is I'm quite connected. I check the Ohana Slack. I check the Discord and this and that. And I take a lot of questions on my Udemy class, on the YouTube channel. And now I've started a Salesforce Break Slack workspace. And we have 400 people. It's just free flow support. Like, if you get stuck, you just go there, you ask your question, and we help you out, right?
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm just trying to create a community. Now there's a salesforcebreak.com website where everything is connected. So for me, the Udemy course is not something that I do one-off and, you know, like, then you learn flows or you don't learn flows. I don't really care about it. No, I mean, I want you...
Creating the ecosystem.
Yeah, I want you to actually keep at it, learn from it, and then develop and improve, because that's how flows really should work. And that gives me also the experience and the superpower to understand what is very hard for people to understand under the flow ecosystem. Yeah. You know, because there are some things that come easy and there are some things that are super difficult for people to understand. Like, for example, one hurdle is variables, collections, you know, that part is difficult. Loops are difficult.
And because they're kind of hitting that code end of the flow architecture, aren't you?
Yeah.
But it is really valuable to learn.
Yeah. And I see that there are super motivated people, and they actually would like to tackle the very difficult flows too early in the learning process.
That's
one of the dangers. You know, you'll see that they don't have the fundamentals down, but they'll be like, okay, well, I want to loop through all the account contact relationships, and then, you know, then take the contacts and loop through the contacts,
and then loop again.
Well, hold on a second. You know, have you done any loops yet? You know,
hitting governor limits left, right, and center.
And those are the important ones. And another thing that is very important, let me say this out loud here, because it relates to the content that you do. If you do not have the fundamentals already as an admin, you're going to have a super hard time doing flows. Because when I'm designing a flow, the first place I go to is my schema builder. I have to know and remember, you know, how these objects are related, what are the relationship types, what are the required fields, right?
Mm.
So I have to have a good understanding. I don't really have to know everything, you know, and memorize everything. I can look them up, obviously. But if you do not have the basic understanding of all the standard objects and their fields and how they relate to each other,
completely.
How Salesforce works, then you can't really do this relational stuff. You can do simple stuff, but, you know, you can't...
I remember, because I did a... It's the same in the code world as well. Exactly the same. And I remember, actually, years ago, I did a session at Dreamforce, which was the Apex 10 Commandments. And just hundreds and hundreds of people signed up to it. There's probably like 800 people sitting in the room. And one of the slides was basically a chunk of code. And I very nervously asked the audience, what's wrong with this code? And nobody knew what was wrong with it. some people shouted up some questions like no comments or stuff. And I was like, well, yeah, couldn't fit it on the page, but no, that's not it. And eventually I said, well, actually, it's replicating functionality that's in the declarative world of Salesforce.
Exactly.
Yeah, that is what's wrong with it.
Yeah.
It's wrong because you shouldn't have written it in the first place. Yeah. And I think that's also one of the things of kind of, yeah, in Flow as well. You know, why are you creating your own approvals in Flow when there's approval processes or whatever it may be? Which now you've got in Flow anyway now. But yeah, that kind of thing. So understanding, yeah, that core platform, objects, relationships, the features within it. Yeah, I think it's super important.
Yeah, I mean, this just happened the other day on Salesforce Break Slack. Somebody asked me, how would I achieve this, right? You know, this is the use case. Mm. And I said, what's wrong with the formula field?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
And they were like, hold on a second. Yeah, you're right. Let me just check with it.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's happened to me as well. Like, talking about failing, I remember that whole slide came from me actually writing the code and going halfway through going, what the hell am I doing? You know, chucking it out and obviously using the declarative functionality. But yeah. But yeah, it's been super fun. Yeah, have you got anything? Are there other things to say? I think we've gone through loads of stuff. I'll put your course website and also the Slack channel, if it's okay, in the show notes so everybody can kind of sign up.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes.
But yeah, thanks. It's been
a blast. Thank you very much.
Really good fun.
It's great to finally meet you virtually. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing that was unique about my experience, because I started ramping up my Twitter and everything else during the pandemic. So it seems like I know people now very well, like virtually.
Yeah.
And you know, I connected so well, but you know, I kind of use this to my advantage because I'm a natural guy on social media, and it worked out really well for me. So if I ever get to meet, it'll be like, you know, I already know you, right? You know, I've known you for years, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, and also I think it's really great because you've kind of found your niche in the Salesforce ecosystem, and you're now really building on it, creating a community around you, around Flow, helping the community, and really kind of bringing your profile, you know, raising your profile as well, which is, I think, you know, everybody should find the bit of Salesforce they love and really kind of help and support the community in that area. And also by being known that, it kind of raises your profile and, you know, you kind of have a lot of fun doing it. I know I do.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.